Welcome inside 254. Let's close the office door and start the conversation. The talk around the table today is about Charlottesville. What we're going to try and do today is help you think through some aspects that may not be covered as heavily in the news, and also we are processing this just like you are, so we're going to try and talk in a way that helps you process it right along with us. I've been hearing and seeing a lot in the media and on like Facebook feeds and comments and things. People are saying, this is not America, this is not us. And that statement really rubs me the wrong way. I think it's a problem because this is who we are. Our country, if you know our history, was founded first and foremost on the literal genocide of indigenous peoples who were already here. And then you take that and you add the cultural genocide that occurred once America started and started pushing native peoples off their land and stealing it in order to start building up America. And by the way, on top of that, we brought slaves here to build this nation, to build the literal infrastructure, the buildings, the places, the towns. So to say this isn't America is just not true. So for me, I really feel like we need to stop saying that, and we need to start saying, like, all of us white people, I'm going to call all of us out, we need to have a real come to Jesus conversation with ourselves and say, okay, yes, this is who we are, and it sucks, and we need to do better, but let's not ignore and dismiss the truth and the facts of our history and our reality in favor of saying, well, that's not me, that's not who, no, but it is us, it is us. And white supremacy is at the foundation of this nation, and it still is controlling everything. So if we want to grow from a nation founded in hate and bigotry and white supremacy and racism and genocide and move into a country that we are growing in love and tolerance and understanding and acceptance of everybody here, we're going to have to do some serious changes, but that starts with accepting who we actually are. And it's going to make people uncomfortable, but that, yes.
Yeah, I wonder if we could all just take a moment and work with the radical notion that this is America, because my feed is the same. This is not who I am. This is not who we are. And I feel like there's been large groups and swaths of the population that has been saying for decades, centuries, this is who America is. And so when I see the, this is not my America, or this is not who I am, or even I didn't vote for him, I find myself saddened and also realize that if we continue to be stuck in that idea of hashtag make America great again, as if there was some greatness, that if we continue to be stuck with that, we're never going to move past it. So maybe we could all sit and work with this radical concept that this is exactly what America is. And there are other good parts too, right? But that structurally, like you just explained, that structurally, this is exactly what America is. And it hasn't been working for a lot of people for a long time. These people have been pleading to the point where their hashtag is literally my life matters. So this is who America is. And if it took until now for you, dear listener, to see that, I'm glad you're seeing it now. I wish you had been listening to people for decades who have been screaming this. But if now is the time, then I will take it.
I will too.
And if you can sit with this, that this is the America that a lot of people are living in, maybe, just maybe, we can finally tip into structurally changing America into what Amanda just described of love and moving past structural hatred, genocide, and oppression. Because That is America. Individually, you're all nice people, right? Like, I'm not saying that Americans aren't nice and they don't help each other. Individually, on an individual basis, yes, you are right. I am not hanging out on a daily basis with neo-Nazis. However, I am living in a structural situation that benefits me, that has been made on the backs of others, and that no matter how hard I try to be a good individual, the structural part is not going to go away until we all say out loud, this is America. This
you
is know, it.
Yeah. And I actually want to, now that you mentioned that, let's dig into what that actually means. How the structure, how the white supremacist structure of America benefits us. This is a good opportunity for us to sort of, again, remind our listeners That's of cool. our subject matter position. We are both white. We are both college professors. We both had opportunities at different varying degrees in our lives, of course, to pursue education, pursue art, pursue, in my case, theater and dance, and start school, start college early, in my case. I was thinking about this morning as because of the skin I was born in. Never mind that, because there's a gendered aspect to this too. I know the idea that I'm a woman is not, that's a problem. But I'm talking about specifically my white skin, and I'm very white. I burn very,
you are.
I burn very badly in the sun.
You white.
I am a ghost. So me as a white, because of the color of my skin, I have been given the benefit of the doubt my whole life, from a being a baby to a young child in grade school. The assumption is that I could do the work, that I could lead the group, that I could handle that task, that I was trustworthy, that people could reach out to me and talk to me. I mean, I could go on and on, but I mean, when I sit and think about the advantages that I've had, yes, they were economic because my parents did well, but it's also the color of my skin. I went to an all-white grade school. I don't remember one black or brown face in my junior high. It wasn't until I got to high school and we had about 6 African-American students in the entire school, 2,000 students. So I was surrounded by white people. And it wasn't really until I was late high school and into college where I started interacting with people who looked differently from me. That is also white supremacy. Now, do I feel guilty about that? No, I had nothing to do with that. But I at least recognize the advantages that were bestowed upon me, not because of anything I did.
Right. But not because of you individually.
No, it wasn't me as an individual.
Because of structurally.
Right. So I
understand, right? Like, yeah. I understand that people don't want that they've worked hard taken away from them. Because I've worked really hard. So yeah. I get it.
And
I get
people that endure hardships, no matter right. the color of our skin. We all endure hardships. So I'm
individually,
not. Individually. Right. I mean, I've been through some shit, but that's the thing. I'm trying to separate that out and recognize.
That's what we have to do. Right. It's the difference between you as a lovely individual. I always try to explain equity as if it's a baseball game, you started on third base.
Yes.
So is my daughter, right? Like individually, like, and of course that's wearing the life
uniform,
I want for her.
Wearing a right. uniform you with a bat that on, works.
You right? started on third base
yeah.
and somebody else was coming out from the dugout and had to do all that work just to get to where you started.
Right.
That's when we talk about equity, mm-hmm. I want everybody to start from the dugout. When we talk about this and we say, this is not America, I am not devaluing the individual pursuits of people. But what I'm asking is, what base did you start on? What base did you start on? And if you are white, there's a good chance you at least didn't have to climb out of the dugout. Now, that's not taking into account economic factors, gender right. factors, all those other factors. Mm-hmm. We're just talking today about Charlottesville and what that's bringing to light. What if we worked with the radical notion that you don't have complete and utter power over every single move that you make in the world? What if we work with the radical idea that whiteness, which wasn't even a concept, really, until like 200 years ago, 300 years ago. What if we worked with the idea that that's a thing, okay? Yeah. That that is an actual thing.
Yeah.
That that does bestow upon us privilege. Not that you didn't work hard.
The fact that we both, we're doing it right now. We're like almost saying, well, we know everybody works hard, but there's this thing.
I want to say and.
Yeah, yeah. Not but.
I want to say and. You individually worked hard
and
structural oppression exists. I want it to be and. It's not a binary.
Right.
It's together.
It's not just structural oppression existing, but it's also you worked hard and you are benefiting from the structural white supremacist system that we currently have in place.
That so Nazis can march in a street and a president can defend them. Means this exists. Like, I don't know at what point, I don't know how to have this conversation anymore, because I've been having it for so, I mean, this is my 21st year of teaching. I have been having this conversation for 21 years with other people. I don't know how to say it differently. I don't know how to say it anymore. And if seeing people with swastikas in a street in an American city being held up as peaceful protest, then finally, if that is what it takes, please come along for the ride with me and let's talk about structural oppression.
And speaking of structures, is it three or four business high level CEOs have stepped
three
down.
Failed, and one said he was
the
stay
Walmart
on.
Exec.
Yeah,
yeah. So three of Trump's CEOs on his manufacturing council have stepped down and publicly spoken out against Trump's equivocating, false equivalency, his move of false equivalency to...
Stay tuned for the Trumpster
fire. We're going to talk about the problem with false equivalency in the Trumpster fire. So the fact that he did that and he did not actually come out and condemn, because he doubled down on his original statement when he came out with that stupid press conference. I swear, my prediction is General John Kelly... Hey, did you see his face?
I did.
I have no sympathy.
Listen, people, you get into bed with the devil.
But I'm telling you, my prediction is he's going to be gone, because he's going to leave. He's going to resign before the end of the year because of this foolishness.
He's going to resign by the time this podcast
Maybe.
Comes out.
Maybe. I don't
smart.
Know. But I really, what I've done, even just this morning, I tweeted at Senator Bob Casey, Senator Pat Toomey, Representative Charlie Dent, and some others who have come out. You know, our representatives in our state, Pennsylvania, and I've tweeted at them, thank you for making a clear statement against hate and the neo-Nazis. And I asked them in my tweet to tell the president he's wrong and to persuade their GOP peers to come out and do the same. Because I think, like you said, if this is the moment, maybe this is the moment where these people who are so interested and so invested in maintaining their own power in Congress, maybe this is the moment they realize, I might actually have to take a stand here. And it might not be completely popular with 100% of my constituents, but I'm going to do it anyway because it's the right thing to do.
If...
Maybe.
My head is... My eyes are bulging.
I know. I'm ever hopeful.
If you, and so am I.
Even in my anger.
If we need to commend people with political agency, if we need to commend them for denouncing Nazis, that to me is the perfect example of the fact that structural oppression exists.
Yeah, I agree.
That I have to spend my time thanking people that have been elected to serve me for saying 100% no, this is not okay. That's structural oppression. The structures now are sucking all of our time. And so I don't get to be creative. I don't get to spend more time with my family because I need to spend all my time now working against such structures that oppress people. I am not oppressed. Very much. Okay. Like, I'm a
Neither
woman, but like, I am rich now, but compared to how I grew up, it would be very easy for me to just eat bonbons. That I have to spend my time, my precious, precious, precious resource of time, commending people for not liking Nazis and telling other people we shouldn't like Nazis is a place where I never thought we would get so publicly. Like, I think this is America, but just so incredibly publicly, like the Tiki Torch Company felt the need to put out a statement saying, we do not condone the mm-hmm. use of our products mm-hmm. in Nazi parades is unbelievable and so believable.
Yeah. And I will say also, I know we've both watched the Vice report. Ugh. I give that reporter, that young woman,
so much
credit for agreeing. And, you know, honestly, maybe she was like, no, I want to do this.
She didn't know what she was bargaining for.
She didn't really know. And I watched that whole report.
22 minutes of awfulness. 22 minutes.
And I recommend everybody go and find it and watch it. It is hard to watch. It is chilling. When that man says that the killing of Heather Heyer was justified, I'm getting chills right now. Just my skin is crawling. We are at a particular moment right now, I think, and we are either heading toward a civil war. And I know there are people who are going to be like, no, that's extreme. No, I think that it's either going in that direction or, like you said, maybe this is that moment where everybody's taking a breath going, whoa.
I think it's both.
I think we need to all hang on a second.
Yeah.
Because it's now, and like what you said, it's much more visible now. It's always been with us, right? This racism, this hatred, the bigotry, the anti-Semitism, it's all been there. But now the hoods are off, the covers are off. These people are unapologetic. They are proud. I think I read that there are some like 9 additional neo-Nazi rallies being planned for this weekend. Oh, and by the way, I'm done calling it the alt-right. They are Nazis. So
those people are actual right.
Like, and they are unapologetically. So I am going to, from now on, it is not the alt-right. It is Nazis. So that is the Nazi wing of the GOP. They need to be denounced and they need to be called what they actually are. But they're like something like 9 additional rallies they're planning just this weekend. I feel like it's just going to keep ramping up. I'm hoping that something good comes out of this, but I'm afraid as that Nazi said on that report, a whole lot more people are going to die. I mean, he said that. So I know you're looking at me like, oh my,
I agree with you.
Right? It's like that's.
I agree with you. This and that person believes that he is going to kill for a justified cause. The mm-hmm. cause of white, I don't even know what he called it.
I don't know.
But like the pure state or something like that. But like people, he really believes that he is doing God's work. Mm-hmm. And so
anybody,
you don't stop somebody, like you don't stop somebody from doing that.
No. But I will say, and I'm also kind of done with people who are apologists for these folks. That includes the president, that includes anybody in my personal or work circle, anybody who is saying, hey, you know what? They're just misunderstood. We need to understand bigotry. We need to understand. No, I'm fucking done understanding. I already understand it. And it is just what we talked about. I'm done.
Well, it's funny.
I'm done.
And in November, everybody was like, we really need to listen to these people. I was like, uh-huh, sure. Because I haven't heard this story before.
You have to pick a side. You're either for Nazis or you're against Nazis. It's that clear, that simple. And if you're not willing to pick a side, you're part of the problem. Period.
Like what you're hearing? Hey Podbean listeners, see that green Become a Patron button at the top right of your screen? You can click on that, donate $1 a month, and get a cool sticker, a Facebook shout out, and our undying gratitude. iTunes listeners, we didn't forget about you. If you go to our Facebook page, you'll see a blue Shop Now button. Click that button and it'll get you to that same site. Thanks for keeping us sustainable.
Time for Trumpster Fire. Colleen, we need to talk about false equivalency. Do you know what that is?
Tell me. Okay. Rhetorician.
Yes. So false equivalency is a rhetorical strategy, but it's also a logical fallacy. False equivalency is when two opposing sides or two views or two actions appear to be logically equivalent when they're not actually logically equivalent. A good example would be apples and oranges are the same because they both have seeds. So we know apples and oranges are both fruit, but clearly they're not the exact same because they taste different, they look different, they grow different. That's a false equivalent. That's a friendly false equivalency. I'll give you another false equivalency. I just read it this morning as a good example. And this was given as an example. This isn't something that someone literally said.
So, this is not something we agree with.
No, but this is a false, it's a more extreme false equivalency. Maybe people can get their heads around this. Gang members wear hoodies. Nuns wear habits. Therefore, right, that's mm-hmm. the implied, therefore, nuns are no better than gang members. Mm-hmm. That's a false equivalency that now puts nuns and gang members in, shall we say, a morally equivalent state. Their intentions, their actions, their thoughts, their ideologies, their approach to life is the same, when we know for a fact that clearly someone who is a gang member and someone who is a nun, they are not the same. Okay, so that's for any logical thinking person.
So the equivalency of those two things is false.
Okay. What the effect of false equivalency is, the assumption that those two opposing or different things are the same.
Okay.
That is what we are seeing Trump do with the Charlottesville protest.
So when I hear him say the three words that I really, really think are going to eventually take him down, on many sides, when I hear him say that on Saturday. So you're saying that is a false equivalency.
Yes.
Help us understand the false equivalency that he is making in that moment.
He is saying that the neo-Nazi protesters with helmets, shields, guns, chants of Jews will not replace us, and their intention was the exact same as the counter-protesters who came to protest the neo-Nazis' racism, hatred. So he's saying those two sides.
So the neo-Nazis, or I'm sorry, those, the counter-protesters who show up with no guns.
With no guns.
No weapons.
They had bats. A few of them, like, because, okay, right, there are a few people in the Antifa movement who are sort of the more extreme. They're willing to defend themselves, they're willing to be more physically aggressive. Okay. And that is not the majority of people who show up to protest. But I just went to a protest the other day, a rally.
People who are showing up without those things.
Right. So the false equivalency he's creating is he's saying that those people on the Nazi side, Kluxers, the neo-Nazis, the white supremacists, the white nationalists, all those people who showed up with torches, screaming blood and soil, with the Nazi chants and their Nazi flags and their swastikas, are the exact same as the counter-protesters who were protesting their presence, who were protesting hatred and violence and racism. So he's putting them together. And unfortunately, that false equivalency resonates with his supporters and even with even more moderate conservatives who, you know, they just voted for Trump because of economic anxiety. And we've talked about that on this before. This is not economic anxiety. This is racial hatred. So the false equivalency of those two groups is, I think, furthering the divide in this country. It's escalating an already big problem. So this is not de-escalation. This is escalating. Right. What he's doing is he's ramping up his supporters and he's ramping up even people who are moderate going, hey, that's right, they're just as bad. And it's also ramping up folks on the left, on our side, who are saying, you know, fuck you. We are not the same as, are you fucking kidding me? So all that's doing is escalating an already explosive, emotionally charged problem.
And the other thing that we want to remember is the response is like, well, he didn't say that, being that being like, I support Nazis. However, something I always teach my students is what is said in the silence and what is said in the space. So if there is space to insert some kind of, when you are not absolutely clear in your condemnation, mm-hmm. it creates a space for people to fill in their own blank.
That's equivocation. So equivocation is the use of ambiguous language,
which he does all the time.
Right. In order to conceal the truth or to avoid committing yourself to something, right? What he's doing right now is both false equivalency and equivocation. And here's the other aspect to this.
Yes, rhetorician. Tell us.
I see a lot of people on my news feed saying, well, but he didn't say he supports them. He didn't actually say. And what that says to me is that people don't understand how false equivalency and equivocation works. You don't have to directly use explicit language like, I support X or I defend X. So you don't have to use that direct explicit language in order to implicitly condone something that's happening or a group of people. So what he's doing is implicit acceptance, well, this, implicit
support.
When you
hear people say it's a dog whistle, yeah. That's what they mean, right? Yeah. The dog whistle can't be heard except to the audience that wants to hear it, right? A dog in this case. The dog whistle is no one else can hear it because you're not actually saying it. But the people that are listening for the dog whistle that might be hearing at a different frequency mm-hmm. hear loud and clear what it is you are actually saying. Mm-hmm. And as we see from the Klan's members' Twitter feeds that mm-hmm. I've read in mm-hmm. the past few days. I can't believe I just said that sentence out loud.
I know.
Is they have filled in that void. Donald Trump purposely created a vacuum and let it be filled in. And then you don't get to just go, oh, and shrug your shoulders. You don't get to do that when you are the president of the United States. You don't. If you create a vacuum, it is going to be filled in. If you speak in equivocating language, everyone's going to fill that in with their own ideology. And now you are responsible, Donald Trump, you are responsible for that vacuum in your language. And you are responsible for what you have wrought.
It's come to some of the commenters. I've been watching different news reports and reading different stories, and there's a lot of people, and I will say there's a lot of people on both sides of the political spectrum who are saying you and I agree that he never had any moral credibility. But even for those who were trying to give him the benefit of the doubt with some moral authority, he's just lost it.
Thank those people for definitively using language. Like, we create ourselves through language.
Yes.
Words matter. Those people who have stood up and said, you know what? I was wrong. I commend you. I think you are brave. Mm-hmm. And I so deeply appreciate that you are willing to say that. Yeah. Because it takes a big person to say, okay, I have reached the end of my rope. I no longer can condone this. Because those people also stepped into that vacuum, right? Like,
they did.
So maybe that's a good thing, right? Yeah. Like, Donald Trump created a vacuum that can be filled in with mm-hmm. anybody, you know, with whatever you need it to be filled in with. Klan's members are like, woohoo, he's helping us. But a lot of people have stepped into that vacuum and said, okay, you have created a space for my understanding that you are a total reprehensible human being.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe that's a good part of the on many sides comment that came out on Saturday.
As this is a still developing situation, and I don't think this is going away anytime soon, I think with the new neo-Nazi rallies that are being planned and with, I think, the Antifa movement, as well as just your average protester, your average human being who wants to go out and support peace and trying to change things, I suspect there will be more clashes. I suspect there will be more false equivalents. I suspect there will be more doubling down. I suspect there will be more defensiveness on the part of Trump supporters who just don't want to let this go and admit that maybe the guy that they put their faith into doesn't actually deserve it. I think we're headed into a pretty violent and clashing fall.
And dear listeners, please be exact in your language.
Yeah.
Be exact in your language on your newsfeed. Take that extra minute to say, is what I am saying definitive? Does this create space for somebody to plug in their own beliefs? You know, Amanda and I are really good about being definitive. Okay. It's always very clear where we stand.
Mm-hmm.
We don't equivocate.
No.
But that takes some time and that takes some effort and that takes some courage. So let's all be there, right? Like, and I've admired my friends who have put on their newsfeed. It's taken me a few days. But here's what I'm finally going to say, because I wanted to make sure I said exactly what I meant. Do that. Don't go off the cuff. Know exactly deep in your heart where you definitively lie and then say it out loud.
And I'm going to take that a step further. I agree with you. I've seen some of my friends do that as well. They've taken a few days to process and think, or maybe some of them were I mean, literally out of the country or on vacation, and they weren't, God love them, looking at the news, which that's awesome.
Good for you.
To take a break. But then,
that's why we are here.
Yes. We're trying to give voice to things where other people might not feel comfortable. However, this is kind of that moment where it's time to stop hiding behind, I just need to be comfortable. I just need my family and friends to like me. I just need whatever. Now is the time to, when someone comes into your newsfeed after you've posted a clarifying statement and shared a difficult article, like the Vice report, and someone comes in who's a relative or who's a friend or a colleague or a former high school associate and starts ranting that you're wrong and that Trump is right and, oh, those liberals and the media and blah, blah, blah. Now is the time for you to push back against that person. Now is not the time to be quiet or say, yes, I respect your right to say that. No. Now is the time to stand up and fight back with your words.
And stand up for your peers. Mm-hmm. I have stepped into a few comment threads.
Yes, I have too.
And I, what I do is I say, if you're just trolling, then I have no time for you. Mm-hmm. But if you are actually interested in discussion, I suggest the podcast and I suggest mm-hmm. the episode on structural versus individual, mm-hmm. or I suggest something really specific. And mm-hmm. I will call that person out and be like, if I actually wrote on somebody's wall the other day because this person just kept going, I was like, if you're trolling, then you can go fuck yourself.
Yeah.
However, if you are not trolling and mm-hmm. you really want to think about this, I'm going to put this out here.
Yeah.
And the person wrote back and was like, no, I'm not trolling. This is just something I hate about the left. And I'm like, okay, then listen to something, think about something. But I think it's important to step in on each other's conversations too.
I agree.
Because you get tired of defending yourself to the same people. Mm-hmm. And so I think it's important to step in and take the breath for that mm-hmm. person that's kind of been trying to have that solid argument and the person's not listening. And it also helps, because then that person, and I always say, are you trolling or are you really trying? Are you debating? Mm-hmm. And I really try to call that person out. And I think that's important to just be like, what are you trying to get? Are you just being a jerk to my friend? Or are you really interested in that debate we were all supposed to have after November 8th?
And it can help your friend feel less alone.
And that's what I mean.
That's like, community too.
That's the most important part of it. Like, I'm probably not going to change the heart and mind of that person,
right.
but I'm going to take the pressure off my brave warrior students who are out there like amazingly trying to have these conversations. I can step in and show them that I support them and I'm paying attention and that they're not alone.
I'm just going to end our little fire here with a shout out to our Kutztown University student government body president, Molly Gallagher.
Hey, Molly.
She is one of, I think, over 128 student body presidents who wrote an open statement, not equivocating. Absolutely standing up against what Donald Trump said and against the hate that was in Charlottesville and the neo-Nazism. I really give her huge props for adding her name to the list. I mean, it's the right thing to do, but it's a hard thing to do. That's incredible to take a public stand. So we have students who are willing to stand up, be brave, and take a stand. Okay, all of you adults, really? Come on.
Yeah. And I'm so grateful for that level of leadership of the student body, because we dealt with this on our campus last semester.
And I think we're going to have to deal with it again.
Oh.
I'm sure it's coming
again. The knot in my stomach about what we might be facing this semester. Yep. So we all need to be on the same page. So I'm just thrilled that Molly put out an unequivocal statement. Thank goodness. If you equivocate, you create space for people to fill in the blanks. Do not do that, people.
Do not accept false equivalencies from our president or anyone else.
Or anybody else, right?
Don't accept false equivalencies.
Or Barack Obama or anybody. Your professors.
Yeah, don't challenge. When you see anybody creating a false equivalency where there's this equivalence between something that is clearly wrong and something that is either clearly right or possibly on the opposite side, but it's being presented as they're the same, you need to question that. You need to recognize that it's happening and you need to question it and push back against it.
Please.
Let's take a time out for a Media Minute. Educate yourself on the Nazi phrase, blood and soil, which was the primary rally chant in Charlottesville. Blood and soil was an important philosophy for Nazi Germany, although it had been around longer than that. Hitler wanted the Germans to identify themselves with a glorious rural past filled with people who farmed and worked the land and lived the rural life. And Jewish people were blamed for the decline of farming, rural communities, and rural life. So in 1933, Germany, the state hereditary farm law was passed with the aim of, quote, preserving the farming community as the blood source of the German people. The red and black colors of the Nazi flag represent blood and soil. Educate yourself on the Nazi phrases used by the so-called alt-right so that you can recognize American Nazis in our midst. Watch the TEDxWCC talk, quote, Understanding Our Roots, White Supremacy is More Than the KKK, by Dr. Hepzibah Sturmick-Paul, a sociologist who specializes in the study of race and contemporary racial inequality. This 19-minute talk explains how white privilege and white supremacy shaped the structures not only of the speaker's childhood, but also of our country. Much of what she says may resonate with you, so please watch. And finally, read and explore the Southern Poverty Law Center's Hate Watch section of their website. Not surprisingly, the number one story at the top of this page is alleged Charlottesville driver who killed one rallied with alt-right Vanguard America group, and then the link to the story. So when you go to splcenter.org/hatewatch, it comes up with a list of articles. And currently there are 4,754 results, but you can search Hate Watch by keyword. You can also search by ideology. So if you go to their ideology drop-down menu here, you can select alternative right. There's 48 stories. Christian identity, there are 6 stories. Neo-Confederate, 32 stories. Racist skinhead, 13 stories, and so on. You can also narrow your search by groups. So if there is a particular hate group that you would like to look up, I'm not going to name them here, but it seems very extensive, this list. So you can search by hate group. They also have a hate map that shows you where they are located, and currently there are 917 hate groups operating in the U.S., and you can track them with this interactive map. The primary menu bar across the top provides a drop-down menu of resources, including extremist files, of course, the Hate Watch page, a case docket to track legal cases, an intelligence report, publications, and the hashtag report hate. There's a tab on what we do, which is the SPLC, that fighting hate, teaching tolerance, seeking justice, and the Civil Rights Memorial, and a list of their issues, which include hate and extremism, children's rights, immigrant justice, LGBT rights, economic justice. So I definitely recommend going to the Southern Poverty Law Center's Hate Watch page and just explore around. Check out what they have to offer, read some of the stories, monitor your area, and report hate when you see it, hear it, or experience it. Let's end today's podcast with some activist actions.
It is easy to feel like there is not much you can do in light of what has been going on in America for the past 400 years, but also in the past week. So I'm going to send you to the Southern Poverty Law Center's 10 Ways to Fight Hate, a community response guide. And you'll notice that both Amanda and I went to the Southern Poverty Law Center as our first instinct because they have been doing so much work since the 1960s that is deeply based in economic and social justice. So I'm going to read to you the 10 things they suggest, and they explain them. But they are to act, 2, unite, 3, support the victims, 4, do your homework, and by listening to this, you are. 5, create an alternative. 6, speak up.
Number 7, lobby leaders. Number 8, look long range. Number 9, teach tolerance. And Amanda and I are both really honored to work for a publication about teaching tolerance. And number 10, dig deeper. And dig deeper is to look inside yourself for prejudices and stereotypes, to build your own cultural competency, and then keep working to expose discrimination wherever it happens, in housing, employment, education, and more. Dig deeper means that you recognize it begins with me, that you are willing to accept that even individually, even if you don't feel like you have benefited from structural oppression, you probably have. So it begins with me is their number 10. Dig deeper, dig deeper, dig deeper. We will put this on our site, but if you are feeling like, what do I do? The Southern Poverty Law Center has given you 10 very specific, hands-on, tangible things that you can do. And even if you just start with number 10 and work backwards, you will be doing something.
Thanks for spending time with us inside 254. You can find us a lot of places online. You can follow us on Facebook at Inside 254 Podcast. You can find us on Twitter at Inside 254 Pod. Instagram, we're at Inside 254. And we're online, where we put links and more information from each episode at Inside 254 site, S-I-T-E, .wordpress.com. You can follow us on Podbean, and please rate us on iTunes. Thanks for spending time with us this episode of Inside 254.